We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I regret to inform you we may have a left-back crisis, but the good news is we're all prepared for it. This is the Arsenal Vision Post-Match Podcast. My name is Alex Smith, you can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. That's right, look, we went through losing a left-back last season and watching it have absolutely no negative effect on our run-in whatsoever, so I am sure losing Kieran Tierney for the season, as we have done, and we wish him well, and we are sorry to see him go, will have no impact on this season. I imagine that may be a part of the discussion today, not our best performance, I think it's fair to say. At Crystal Palace, I will point out that Tottenham Hotspur, which everyone suddenly thinks is an amazing team, they're so good, they lost 3-0 at Palace. Manchester City lost 0-0 at Palace, if that's a thing. Chelsea just lost 4-1 to Brentford. This stuff can happen. We got to find a way to shake it off, but it may not be so easy. Obviously, injuries to Partey, the continued absence of Tomiyasu, who will be out a further two games at least, and the season-ending injury to Kieran Tierney, which does not have Clive mad at all about international break stuff. Yeah, it's all an uphill battle, and Mikel Arteta has work to do. I think we'll go pretty big picture today on how we go forward from here, because I think that is really a fascinating conversation. But of course, we'll go through the errors, and we'll try to explain why that turd floated up to the top of the bowl yesterday. Before we do that, I just look, especially when you lose heavily, no one wants to start with a feel-good story. But the feel-good story is this. Andrew Arsblog has given his entire monthly Patreon revenue to charity. We are giving and have already given to charity, and we're asking you to do the same at our Just Giving page for the Arsenal Foundation. We've worked really closely behind the scenes with the Arsenal Foundation and nominated a fund that is perfect, because this fund helps children, and it helps children who are refugees from the war in Ukraine, but also fundamentally and crucially stays focused on areas that do not get the media attention they deserve, whether that be Afghanistan, Yemen, Syria, Ethiopia having a particularly bloody civil war, unfortunately, Kashmir. So they are able to direct funds certainly to the Ukrainian refugee children who need it desperately, but also to direct funds to areas that are not getting the attention they need. So I feel really proud of this. For me, this is one of those situations, I think, like Andrew felt. At some point, you look at what the world has been through the last couple of years, and you say, we can do something here, and you dig your heels in, and you say, this far and no farther, we do something now, no matter how small it is, no matter what the impact, we're going to do something. And to do it with the Arsenal Foundation and bring the community together, like, that's as special as it gets, because all of this stuff we do, cheering for the club and supporting the club and rooting for them through thick and thin, high and low, or sometimes yelling at them through high and low, we can do so many other things as a community. And we launched this yesterday morning. We're 60% of the way to goal. And it's just a reflection. And we picked a goal, 50,000 pounds. And in the back of my mind, I thought, I don't know that we can get there. And to be 60% one day in is extraordinary. I'm asking you, we are asking you to give. You can go to arsenalvisionpodcast.com, click charity. It'll take you to the page on Just Giving. It's the easiest way to get there. But you can go to the Just Giving page as well, /fundraising/AVP gives. But just go to the Arsenal Vision podcast site, click charity. Here's the thing though. One quick final point. We're going to do something really, really fun to make this kind of a great contribution. We're going to have an auction. Worry about that later. Every 5 pounds of donation you give is a ticket to the sweepstakes to win a place in a VIP box at the Emirates for Everton on the final day, to relegate Frank Lampard, to relegate Tottenham to Europa League as we take Champions League. Andrew from Ars, from the Arscast will be there. Tim will be there. Clive will be there. Paul will be there. I will be there. You will be in a VIP box. There'll be visitors from the club. Every 5 pounds you give enters you to win that. And like, even though it's a big goal, it's only going to be probably 1,000 or so people that give, you know, and we're so thankful for that. But that means there's a real chance to win this thing. If everybody listening right now gave 5 pounds, we'd like smash the goal many times over. So I really hope you'll give. Tim, I just want to ask you, you've been going for years and years and years and years and years, home and away. Have you ever done the VIP boxing? I have never been in a VIP box, any sport, anywhere, anytime.
Once, and it was with the foundation as well about 10 years ago. They have something, it's slightly different though. They have something called a super box at Arsenal where basically they knock two boxes into one. So it's a 24 person rather than a 12 person. And usually like the foundation will use it or someone, you know, like, or the club will use it with a sponsor that they're trying to, you know, keep sweet or something. It's kind of, it's nobody, I think I'm right in saying nobody owns that box. It's like the clubs for their use, but I've never been in like a, in this type of box, which I believe is more intimate.
It's 12 people. Look, I want to be clear. I will be abusing the champagne, like recklessly. Oh, yes. I just want to be clear about that. Yeah. I mean, Clive, you're fancy, so I assume you've been.
Yes, I've been a few times.
Did you fly on your PJ to get there?
It's very nice. I think, you know what, Tim, that 24-person box, you know who I think used to own that? Was a certain Usmanov.
Yeah.
And so he was that's the only thing he was allowed.
Tim's got blood on his hands. You heard it here first.
And so, yeah, I've been there. It's very nice. They've got a separate level to the club levels, one up. Love your food around there. The boxes are nice. Nice food. Nice.
Yeah, they bring the food right in. They bring the drinks right in. The seats are right there. I mean,
the seats are right outside the window. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really nice.
You really get
to
ignore the realities of life. I'm not even sure like a bad result could permeate the joy of that experience, but you're going to be there watching me be a complete lunatic while picking the brains of great football minds. Paul, can you at least be with me in my non-fanciness and say that you've never been, or have you been as well?
I have not been.
Does
seem strangely appropriate that it would be Usmanov's box, but
we're not going to be in the Usmanov box. Don't worry about that.
Exactly.
Don't worry about that.
Well,
to be fair, it isn't Usmanov's box. Let's not tar the
club. And I are going box to box, drink in hand.
I mean, look, by the time it's halftime, I will not know how to get back to the box from the toilets. I can assure you that. Okay. Moral of the story, please give generously. We love you for doing it. This community is the most wonderful thing in my life outside of my wife and children and parents who I'm legally obligated to name, but thank you. Thank you so much. And as I said, we've given, we will continue to do so. Every 5 pounds, you get a chance to enter that. Okay. I managed to do that in under 5-ish minutes. I hope you don't mind, but obviously a worthy cause. And it's 5 minutes we're spared of having to talk about the football. Tim, there is a tendency at this time of the season to overreact to results. And I have to admit, I got a little flash of the Emery season when a Crystal Palace game didn't go our way and it cost us top four. And yeah. I had to resist that temptation. But what makes this stand out, right? Like, this run was always going to have a bump along the way, right? We weren't going to win every game all the way to the run-in. I mean, we could have, but I don't think we were going to. The thing that makes this one really difficult to analyze is the extent to which so many players who have been so good just didn't show up. Weird bad touches from Odegaard, total lack of control from Thomas Partey, Gabriel asleep, you know, Nuno Tavares, we'll get on to him maybe a little bit later. I thought Saka struggled to get involved. Just across, and Cedric, you know, I think we finally saw the level from Cedric we might have been worried about. Like, how do you explain a group collectively failing to match the physicality, the intensity, and the quality of the opposition after so long being so good?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? And probably the question on all of our lips.
If we could answer it, right?
I think the part of the truth anyway, I think there's a lot of things going into this. I think part of the truth is just that Crystal Palace had our number, and they had our number at the Emirates in October as well. And you referenced some of the results they've had this season against some of the bigger teams. It really seems like Patrick Vieira is a manager who does his homework and is quite good at mitigating against the strengths of other teams. And Palace have undergone a complete transformation in the way they play. This could not be more opposite to the way Roy Hodgson had them set up, because And I watched them closely against Man City. They were so aggressive in terms of their press. I don't mean in terms of like Stoke City. He's a good lad and loves his mum aggression. Like this was Conor Gallagher type, just getting in your face, not giving you a second to settle. And I think that's probably the closest thing to the truth, is that Palace just had our number, and particularly in the first half. And we were a bit shook by it. And the thing is, sometimes you can be a bit shook for half an hour in a game, but they punished us with two goals. And the weird thing is, I mean, it's kind of a redundant comment, but from the 30th minute to the 90th minute, I thought we were okay. I thought we were decent, but the damage was already done. And obviously, to some extent, Palace knew they'd already inflicted the damage and didn't have to go chasing after us anymore. But I think the main truth is that they just, like, they rattled us, quite frankly, with their approach and the way they played. And not only that, we gave stupid goals away to them as well. And that's that's fundamentally where this game was won and lost. When Palace had their chances, they scored them. And Arsenal didn't have any till they were 2-0 down, but they did have chances to come back into the game and miss them. That first half an hour was just so, so damaging. And I think to concede basically to Palace's first attack just really knocked Arsenal's confidence, really knocked them off their stride. And by the time they got their stride back, the game was already gone. So really, I think that it was a disastrous first 30 minutes. That's my assessment of the game. After that, I think we were all right. And I think we kind of got back on a level footing. It was just too late by then.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I don't want to portray what I'm about to say as suggesting that this was a game where we played well or we were even or anything like that. But, you know, I think if you take the penalty out, because a penalty is like a 0.7 expected goal chance, Palace were 0.7 and we were 1. So, you know, unexpected goals. So the only reason I bring that up is to make the point that, like, to Tim's point, we lost the physical battles. We didn't match their energy. We made a couple of silly errors that gift them goals and we're out of the game, and that's that. And like the one really big difference in this game versus other games, we've had stretches of some games during this run where we haven't had our best, but we've been tight defensively. We've been well positioned. We haven't been exposed. And as a result, you can then get back in the game. Well, when you gift two sloppy goals with a lot of errors, you're out of the game, right? And then even though I thought we were better in the second half, it's too late. And the funny thing is, you know, there was a time not so long ago when any time we had a bad performance, I was certainly willing to point a finger at Mikel Arteta. I don't think there's any finger to be pointed at Mikel Arteta. And in fact, I think every sub he made was probably the called for sub and made at the right time and did produce an improvement in our performance. It just was not recoverable once we were behind.
Yeah, the real worry, as well as the injuries from this game, is the kind of, does this mean we've been sussed a little bit, or is it just that Palace sussed us? Because Palace sussed Man City, and nobody else has done that, but we're not Man City. So that's really the question, and I think we'll go a long way to finding that answer on Saturday.
Yeah, well said. And Paul, just really quickly on the goals, I can't really look past this, the goals, because they basically made the game a non-issue at that point. But even before that, we saw from Thomas Partey and Martin Odegaard some real sloppiness and an uncharacteristic poor decision-making. And it made me realize how central they have been to the success we've had. I mean, there was one moment where Odegaard has the ball in the half space, edge of the final third, Bukayo Saka's running in behind the fullback. He couldn't be more available. And Odegaard just turns around and tips it back, maybe to Cedric or maybe to Partey, whoever it was, but like just very uncharacteristic. There were a lot of sloppy touches, sloppy layoffs that we haven't seen in a while. And I think it is easy sometimes to blame your own players and not see what the opposition are doing well. I thought Palace showed great intensity. They competed physically at a very, very high level. You know, I remember in the Discord in our match day chat, everyone kept saying, we just got to ride out these 20 minutes. Surely they can't keep this energy going for the whole game. And the crowd there was making it a really difficult sort of cauldron environment. But I'm curious how you explain the Partey and Odegaard performances and their contribution to us not getting off to a good start. I think Clive mentioned in the instant reaction, and I don't want to steal Clive's genius, but I'm just going to, that Odegaard comes back from international break and drops 2 out of 10s routinely. So what's the deal? Why those two? What did you see that didn't work in their performances?
They were both sloppy. I don't know. There's a lot to say on it. You could find reasons why. I mean, Clive in the WhatsApp beforehand was talking about how Partey had scored one of the most significant goals in Ghanaian history. Arteta did warn of this beforehand about the emotional drop that comes for players after being away playing important games for their country. I thought it might be why Martinelli wasn't starting, but Smith Rowe was. You know, Smith Rowe had been local. Martinelli's first game for the Seleção or Seleção.
Seleção. Mm-hmm.
Who?
Tim?
Who? Seleção. Would even
Seleção.
Know.
There it is.
Seleção.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Okay. But it turned out it was Partey, a much more experienced hand, but a much more emotional trip further to go. I do think there's something in that. And of course, he was pressed to hell by Conor Gallagher, but not every time. And in fact, some of his sloppiest passes were when he wasn't pressed. And so, I do agree with the general view, having watched it again, that, we did just have to ride it out. And in the period we had to ride it out, we conceded two stupid goals. I mean, from a set piece, we haven't been doing that all season. Gabriel's just had a kid, and he's probably bleary-eyed. There was a really good analysis on Sky Sports, Wayne Rooney and Jamie Carragher, about how Gabriel takes an extra a short step instead of a full step when he's going for the ball. That's why it skates off his head and then hits off Nuno. How do you legislate for that if you're the manager? The Ars Cast was really good. I haven't got all the way through it, but they start off with the same question.
Plastic Ars Cast fan there, haven't made it all the way through it. You had time.
Yeah, yeah. I'm working on it. I got a longer run later on. I'll listen to it. But anyway, they have this conversation around Arteta saying we need to come out strong for this game to kind of be full out of win our challenges and stuff. And yet the discussion was, well, why didn't we? I think it's a bit like two sumo wrestlers. Like they both know.
I was going to say that too, yeah.
Yeah. They pull up their thing and then they both know to just when it goes, but one guy's always that bit more intense, especially if he's got the home crowd. Like I'm sure Tim and Clive can talk to this a lot better, but that feels like a really small ground when the crowd's behind you, even if you come at it pretty full measure after an interlull, and Palace have that behind them, and that's their, they're young, energetic. That's their game plan. That's like 90% of it. I actually think until the first goal, we were in or thereabouts. I mean, they were a little stronger. We had to ride it out, but we were actually beginning to play it out from the back and connect. And we had a couple of moments that could have turned into things. Then we give away a stupid free kick from Ben White. That was unnecessary. Zaha's over by the touchline just a stupid fucking goal. And that's the section. The section between the two goals is when we are terrible, absolutely abysmal. I think we're rattled. I think we're like, oh, Jesus Christ. Because the level of intensity in our challenges before and after is quite different. We're not they're a little more intense. Well, they're a fair bit more intense, but we're still going at it for the first, what is it? Their first goal is on 17 minutes. Up to that point, not so bad. It's kind of ride it out territory. And then after that, we're abysmal. And then they score on 23 minutes. And then I think we're still bad for a few minutes after that. We kind of gather our feet like a boxer. It's kind of like your head clears. There's a break or two in the play. We get our shit together and we then begin to start to play football. But by then you're two goals down. But the sloppiness throughout the game, there isn't a good reason for it. You can see enough of the elements of how we play good football that didn't come to fruition early enough. And the sloppiness just kind of takes it apart. You can't do that. Yeah. You just can't do it. It won't hold water.
Yeah. Well, Clive, I mean, I think we've put off then a topic that most people would have near the top of the show for as long as possible, as I want to do. there really are no easy choices now. I want to emphasize this. With no Thomas Partey, with no Kieran Tierney, with no Tomiyasu, there are no easy choices, and big, big decisions have to be made. We saw Xhaka left back last season in the run-in. It's one thing to do that if you have Thomas Partey. It's another thing to do that if you don't have Thomas Partey. There's no easy choices, but the easiest choice is to stick with Nuno Tavares, a player who has immense physical gifts, who is extremely inexperienced, who has looked good at times this season, but in consecutive appearances in a cup and in the league, has been taken off at halftime, maybe partly tactically and maybe largely performance-oriented as well. I will point out, this is someone who in his entire professional career over the last three seasons has made a grand total of 31 league starts, and 24 of them were for Benfica. I mean, the guy just has not played a lot of top-level football, and he hasn't played in really, really long time for Arsenal, minus a half in a cup. Clive, before we address how this situation should be resolved, I'd love to hear your take on the Nuno Tavares performance, because I think the two errors for the goal, which he is intimately involved in, make it difficult to otherwise examine anything he did. But I'm curious, you've watched the game again, you've really had a good look at him. What's your take?
Yeah, so first things first, Crystal Palace beat us fair and square. They roughed us up. They did what I thought. We had a conversation the other week about doing something different, and we had this, it ain't broke, so why should we try and fix it? And I was worried about this day because I could see things in the Liverpool game and the Villa game, which I thought needed addressing in our build-up, in our attacking areas. But hey, look, we are where we are. And I thought it was an opportunity to try certain players like Nuno to make sure they weren't cold. So now we have a cold player coming in. I watched the half again. I think when you have a game that had literally 10 players who were below their level, we all go certain places. And I tried to think about the narrative behind why we go certain places. So obviously Nuno's narrative was in last game, he got took off. I don't think he was great in that last game. But in this game, he could have took off any one of 10. He literally could have done. On the goals, so let's talk about the goal, right? Let's talk about the first goal, for example. Ben White comes out, smashes someone unnecessarily. Good free kick from Gallagher into the back stick. Gabriel, who I think was probably one of our worst players on the day, and reasons were totally understandable. He had a moment of his life, totally understandable, right? So doesn't get his feet moving. 1 yard off, deflects it onto someone's head, goal. Nuno ducks under it, probably thinks he's going out to play, so he ducks under it. He hits somebody, wasn't even looking at it, across the box, headed goal, right? So on the second goal, they call it like a, you get on the zigzag, right? The back line wasn't where it should be. So Gabriel jumps out of this line, and the first thing you do as a fullback is you cover around. Nuno didn't cover all the way around. That was his mistake. Once you drop deep, then cover. Do you know what I mean? Don't drop deep and then don't do anything. He didn't track the run, but Gabriel should have cut it out. Again, he was 1 yard off like he was on the first goal. He was 1 yard off on the second goal. 1 yard makes a big difference. 1 yard sharper, that's a clearance, right? So, and then he gets in behind there. And I looked at the rest of the game, and there were a couple of dodgy passes with one short back pass to the goalkeeper, and he got away with it. But everything else is quite conservative. He wasn't run past by anybody. Right, won a couple of aerial challenges. And I thought, okay, he wasn't great, but he wasn't like shockingly bad. Do you know what I mean? I felt there was a nervousness in that left-hand channel, but I think it was both of them. I don't think it was just one of them. I think Gabriel probably had his worst game, you know, for me, and he didn't look ready to play. If anything, the Nuno mistakes was he wasn't Nuno. He didn't drive enough. He was quite conservative. He didn't drive, he didn't disappear. Normally he gets it, moves it, and just drives on, you know, and I think he felt tentative. And so if anything, I want him to be more like himself. And if I, you know, just keep pushing, get it on the front foot, drive, get up behind people, run past people, challenge people offensively. Defensively, he's okay. He's not, for me, it's defensive awareness is the issue. But because he got taken off, the natural tendency to think, well, that's a shocker, absolute shocker. That's the reason why. And I don't agree. And I said before the podcast, he should be the first name of the team. You know what I mean by that. For me, on Saturday, he has to play. We have to play him through this. It's too important. I don't think we should be changing the configuration of the team like we did last year against Villarreal. And when you lose a certain player, you lose two or three departments. We shouldn't do that. We've got to play this guy through this. If there's a perception of bad confidence or bad form, we need to play him through. Much like we played Thomas Partey through, we have to play him through. We have to play him through because he's too important, what he offers the team, the balance he offers the team. I don't want to see Cedric at left back. You know, there are other options we could do with the back four, etc., bring Holding in and, you know, move White over. And we do all sorts of things now, but I want to have that left-footed power. And if we need to go back to a 4-2-3-1 and play on the elbow on the left-hand side and push it out like we were start of the season, then let's do that. And let's create a situation in the game state which suits his superpowers.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we might need to do, right? And so Xhaka sits in the left-back slot, and he also babysits Sambi for his period. And that's what I would do, absolutely playing through. And on Saturday, the fans need to be singing his name because we need him. We absolutely need him to find his confidence. I tell you now, lads, there wasn't so long ago, there was rumours of him being scouted by Man City to go to Man City. Because he was that impressive. There was a debate on this very podcast. Should Tierney come back into the team? Because Nuno's playing that well. And if anything, he's lost his confidence. He's been dropped. You know, so I think we must remember, always remember what you saw, what you feel. And that's what I felt when I first saw him. I like the player. He's obviously lost a bit of something. I'm not stupid. But we can get it back. Mm. We can get it back. And we all have a part of playing that.
And look, I think the other thing you do have to do is you have to take into account the manager's behavior, right? And we don't know. We don't know if it really was purely tactical. I need to get Martinelli on, so I'll take a defender off. I mean, to be fair, Cedric came off for an attacker later in the game as well.
Do you think it was more tactical this time, isn't
it? Because he said it was.
It's about build-up. And I think deep build-up is an issue for Nuno, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. He likes to join in on build-up. He doesn't want to be the guy making the first pass on build-up. And we were lacking there. And because they were pressing Partey, the manager thought, you know what, I'll take Xhaka out of the midfield, bring on an attacker, and I can build up from that side because he's all about build-up because Partey's being man-marked out of the game and we can't build up full stop. So I think it's more tactical. And because we saw him get took off, we think it was more...
Well, maybe not.
Well, he wasn't the only one. There's lots of people had a problem.
Paul, I'm going to come back to you quickly, but let's not bog down here. I just know that you wanted to have a go at this. So, I mean, I do tend to think... I've had a long time to think about this since yesterday. And my initial instinct was we just can't use Tavares anymore. And I went on Twitter with it, basically under the theory that it's pragmatism time. And pragmatism demands we get through this run the best we can. And if you've got a guy, because I think the second goal that we concede is more of a Nuno worry, because to me it looks just kind of like falling asleep and not staying switched on. And by the way, there was a lot of weird stuff, like White leaving a ball to Gabriel leaving a ball to White. You know, the ball's in our box and no one going for it. The penalty we give away is neither Gabriel or White wanting to take control of the situation after Partey can't chase it. So like Tavares wasn't alone in that. But the more I think about it, I go with what Clive's point is, which is you've got a left back. He's not perfect. He has flaws. You may have to protect him a bit. But you can just play him and leave the system that has put you in this good position, right there competing for top four, still level on points with a game in hand, or you can totally tear up the system in an effort to address one position. If you go like for like, Sambi for Partey, Tavares for Tierney, you drop down in quality, but your system stays the same and there's continuity for the other players. I also sort of think maybe this would have been a game for Martinelli because his hard direct running pushes fullbacks back. His insane ball recovery running and pressing helps that left back. Maybe, just maybe, this would have been a game where he could have given Tavares a little more support in that respect, but that might be nitpicking. So real quick, so we don't bog down, thoughts on the Tavares performance and if staying with him, even if Arteta may look like that's not his instinct, is the way to get through this.
Yeah, so Clive and I both watched the game again and both miraculously came to a very similar conclusion.
Nuno, first time for everything.
Yeah. Nuno wasn't that bad outside of his clangers. And on the first goal, you know, if that had been headed out for a corner, we wouldn't even be talking about it. Like, that shit happens all the time with Nuno. He's not the big error on the first goal. Second goal, like, that's a massive rookie error. So there's no two ways about it. He's just all wrong on that. And, like, clearly he has loads to learn. But the rest of the first half, you know, it's all right. He helps Bill play, connects well with Smith Rowe. There are some promising almost attacks. It's nothing to write home about, but it's okay. So I'm with Clive on that one. Based on yesterday's performance, like, you can drop him because he dropped a clanger defensively if you want, but the rest of it was okay. Like, I hope why he was pulled off really was tactical. I hope there isn't the bigger issue, which is what I was afraid of in the instant reaction pod. Whoever it was impersonating.
You mean between manager and player?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. An issue for the manager about the player, because he's this in some form twice. 27 minutes in the cup game, he was trying to get a player on the pitch. It took him till 33 minutes to get him off. Massive frustration there. So, like, there could be the whole he finds him hard to coach thing. But in terms of the first half, and given our challenges that we have generally, rather than distorting our whole team and pulling other players into all sorts of unnatural positions, I'm Team Nuno for now. The rest of it was okay.
The only thing I'll say is we've seen Gabriel Martinelli be subbed at halftime of a game that I didn't think he was playing poorly in, but we subsequently know it's because he wasn't in the positions the manager expects the player to be. And my question with Tavares is, we can see on the ball what he brings, his running, his athleticism. We can see some dribbling and some attacking panache. We can see some of the limitations. Everything he does is always half in control and half out of control. What we can't necessarily see is whether he's in the positions that the manager expects him to be in. And that's going to determine it. Now, and
given all our other problems, I vote for work with him as Clive does. But then we don't see all the other stuff. So who knows?
Look, I wouldn't move Bukayo Saka to left back, which is something people want. I wouldn't go to a back three. Where do you play Odegaard in that? Is he on the right, you know, the right side of the it? Tim, this is where, let's get a little big picture. And then I want to zero back in on another performance. We're going to have to make a choice, I think, to either radically change what we've been doing in the absence of these players, and particularly Tierney, go to a back three or move Saka to left back or Shaq at a left back. And you know, then suddenly you're talking about leaving the whole midfield to Sambi Lokonga. Or we're talking about like-for-like changes, and you stick with the system that put you on this run. I've seen an Arsenal trying to compensate under Arteta for absences, shifting their system, doing weird things, and it didn't go well. Mm. I've also seen an Arsenal under Arteta look like one of the best teams in the league playing in this system. My instinct is to try to keep it as intact as possible, and I realize the talent of the players doing it matters as well, but I'm curious where your lean is on how he addresses it. And I want to be clear, because otherwise you could just kill him when he gets it wrong. There are no easy choices now.
No.
There are no easy choices now. The choice to stick with it and just go Tavares and Sambi is dangerous. The choice to tear it up and go to something different is dangerous. There are no easy choices.
No, that's right. I think I'm on the same page as most of you in that if you'd have asked me this question at 10:30 last night, I'd have told you we cannot use Tavares. But having rethought it, I kind of think we have to all the reasons that you set out. And also in the long term, I know it's so difficult because we're in the short term part of the season. We're in the just results matter. But the thing is, if Tavares doesn't start against Brighton on Saturday, I think we've lost him. And that's that. And so that's the magnitude of the decision for Arteta here. I think that's it. His Arsenal career is probably over if he doesn't start Saturday. That might be the right decision. Like, I'm not like entirely married to the idea that he's brilliant and this and that. But, you know, it was really fucking hard to try and get back up for Kieran Tierney and to give up on it after a year. And look, I do think to a large extent this was a real gamble signing. On the other hand, you could say that Tierney's injured quite a lot, and actually who his backup is really, really matters. So that there's so many different angles to this. But if we don't start Tavares, he's gone. We've lost him. It's as simple as that. And that might still be the right way to go. But I tend to agree in terms of I think it would be too much of a kind of shock to the system, literally the system, not least because we're probably going to have to doctor that midfield a bit because we can play Sambi Lokonga. He's perfectly capable of starting Premier League games. Don't think he can do what Partey's been doing, though, be a one-man midfield. So we've already got to kind of bring Xhaka back into the pack a little bit. And for me, I'd be more inclined to address what we're doing going forward and I'll save that because I'm sure we'll talk about that. I'd be more inclined to address and maybe tweak there. And I'd look at Tavares and say, well, look, at least give him the Brighton game, at least give him that. And if he completely flops that, then yeah, maybe we have to, you know, we have to think of something else. But we're going to have to bring Xhaka back a little bit by design, which might give Tavares a bit more protection. I know they've just announced that Tomiyasu isn't going to be back for at least the next two games, but I think that would help in the long term as well. But I'd start him on Saturday, and look, if at halftime on Saturday it's too much, then it's too much. But I don't think we can give up on this player at this point, and I don't think with the other absences we've got going on and possibly a question over striker that we can really afford to do it.
Yeah, and Gabriel won't be as bad as he was against Palace again, and I don't think it helps Tavares to have a totally, like, head's gone, not sleeping, not ready for the game, Gabriel. Nobody was ready. I mean, that's the other problem. Tavares comes into a team where everybody looked a level below the challenge necessary. Well, Tim, I'll stay with you since you referenced it. I think if Tierney was fit and Partey was fit, the conversation we're about to have would be a lot more acute. I think given the number of changes that are now coming into the squad and the number of young, inexperienced players coming into the squad, the conversation may be mooted a bit because too many changes, you know, even if they're warranted, create a disruption. But I felt Lacazette was poor against Villa.
Yep.
And I thought that this was a continuation. And yep, I think that we were generous. And look, like against Wolves, praised him to high heavens. Generous in praising the work he was doing to facilitate our attack, the link up, the creation, the support that he was providing to midfield. Even though he wasn't giving you goals and shots, we were crediting it. I think that aspect of his game has dropped off a bit now. And now we are getting neither the striker stuff nor any really high-level link-up. And that one cross where Partey whipped it in first time and Lacazette had a really nice view of it, whistle past him. Like, we're just seeing, I mean, would it kill you to make a near-post run? It's,
yeah.
He has sort of switched off the striker mentality to some extent. And so, granted, my rambling preamble here, Tim, was, hey, we're going to have to make a bunch of changes, so maybe now's not the time. But if
maybe
that weren't
it is the
case,
the time.
It may be. All right, yeah. Well, rescue me from this ramble, please. Yeah. What's your opinion?
Well, that's the thing. Again, it's the extent to which, is this a one-off? Is it that Palace have got our number, or have we been sussed a little bit? And we don't know that yet, to be fair. And again, on Saturday, it will be clearer. So I wouldn't be furious if Lacazette started on Saturday, because it's quite possible it was just a Palace thing. I agree with you, and we talked about it. I thought it was very poor at Villa as well. And I think we've fallen into, as fans, I don't know whether this has happened with the coach as well, we've fallen into this incredibly low expectation of this player. And I'm not digging out the person who tweeted me this, because I completely understand it. And, you know, they weren't being unpleasant or anything. But, you know, someone's like, well, he scored the winner against Wolves. And I was like, that was 6 weeks ago, you know. And like the way we talk about him, I'm sorry, like physically, I'm going to be harsh here, he's not up to the standard physically. And we talk about him like he's 36 years old. He's 30. He's supposed to be in his physical prime. And I'm sorry, he's not up to it physically. And that is not acceptable. He does not have a big injury history. And since he came, you know, when he first came over and he could only do 60 minutes, you think, okay, that's adjustment to the Premier League. But like, it's always been like that. He's always been physically below the mark. And you have to wonder, like, why? Like, what do you do in training that means that you look like you're blowing out your ass after 30 minutes in pretty much every single game? I just don't think it's acceptable. I think at this point, you start asking questions about why that is. He's not, you know, he's not injured that often. Like, he's got a good, like, bill of health, which, and that also suggests, by the way, that he does, like, look after himself, because if you don't, you tend to pick up injuries. But like, is it just something he can't help? Is it just something in his physical makeup? Maybe it is. But also, I think that he's...
Well, wasn't there a lot of talk, Tim, when he came that he'd always had challenges kind of going the full 90? He doesn't have that kind of engine. That was the talk before he came. And for a while when he joined us, there was a lot of talk about the physical levels he can get, if you want to call it his aerobic capacity. It just isn't where a normal athlete is.
I've been
quite impressed how he's, over the season, how he's kind of got up to the doing whatever level it is for 90 minutes as opposed to 60, 70, and all that match fitness has helped him. But this might just be what he can do, and some other guys can run like Kenyan marathoners, but he's the other end of the spectrum, and it is a spectrum.
Yeah, and you know, look, there might be tough conversations to have about other players whose availability is just beginning to look pretty shaky on a consistent basis, and whether we can, you know, we've had this before, basing our team around guys who can only play 60 to 70% of the season. But the other thing I think is, to your point, Elliot, he seems to have given up on the idea that he is a striker at all and that he belongs in the penalty area ever. And it's like, look, the link-up play, that's all nice. Like, well done, thank you. But, like, there's other aspects to the role that are really important, and you have to at least try to do them. I don't give a shit whether you like doing them or not, or whether you think you're good at them. Like, tough fucking shit. You run in behind, you get in the area, you make front post runs. Like, what I'm seeing from this player at the moment is not befitting of an experienced player, of a leader, of a captain. This, to me, it just looks like a guy who's like, I like doing this, so I'm just going to keep doing this because that's what I like doing, that's what I enjoy, and it's not good enough. It's absolutely not good enough. And I think there are some tough questions to be asked of this player, and I think he's getting off quite lightly because we all know he's going in the summer, and because, yeah, it's difficult because there aren't many other options, and that, let's be clear, is the only reason he is in the team at the moment. Like, if, you know, and I'm not saying we should have kept him or anything, but if Aubameyang's still here, Lacazette's sitting on the bench at the moment. I think it's that simple. I think it's right. Okay. We need someone who's going to, like, score a goal. And if we're not getting the link-up play from Lacazette either, then, you know, we might as well not play him. But and look, maybe I'm being harsh, and maybe like at best, he might have just been sussed a bit. He might be a bit of a one-trick pony. And because he can't slash won't do anything else, like running behind, like make front post runs, it's quite easy for defences to look after him. That's what we saw at Villa. That's what we saw at this game. We talked about it after Villa. We talked about how we should have put Aston Villa away. It should have been 2 or 3 nil before we came under pressure. How Villa were able to step onto us because they knew there was no chance that Lacazette was going to run in behind after anything. And like, sorry, sometimes you've got to do stuff in life, in work, that you don't like doing, that need to be done. And I don't see that from this player at the moment. And that's why I think his place should be under serious consideration. And even if it's not that harsh, he might just have been sussed out. And it might be as simple as that. Either way, that question is there. And I'm sure that Arteta's thinking about it.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, like, he was doing some of both of those things better. In the Wolves game where we praised him, he was linking up brilliantly, creating chances, and, oh, by the way, had 8 shots, I think. And granted, there's game state stuff there, but, like, this is a game we were chasing, and he didn't do any of that. Like, and this is the point, right? There's the near post run he doesn't make. There's the really poor header, and I realize headers are low-quality chances, but it you know, he can do better. There's the one, the best chance of the game probably falls to Smith Rowe, but it only falls to Smith Rowe because Lacazette gets the ball off, I think, Martinelli in a really nice spot and, like, can't get his shot off. And then the stuff that we've been praising him for, the layoffs and stuff, like, do you remember there's the one he drops into midfield and there's, like, a no-look layoff that's supposed to go to Partey and goes to no one and starts a counterattack? Like, the sum total of it right now is we were willing to give up some strikery stuff because so much good play was being facilitated. And Clive, without wanting to stick the boot in maybe as hard as Tim has, what I will say is that the strikery stuff isn't there, but now it is coming without, I think, as effective work between the lines. And that leads me to say, what could a Smith Rowe in that role do? Could he link as well, but also be more explosive in the box? What could a Martinelli do when the center backs know they've got to run? Clive, you said on the Instant Reaction Pod, you talk about center backs who had an easy day at the office. I mean, you know, right now, this is a guy that if you're a center back, I think you're really excited to go up against. It gives me no pleasure to say, you know?
Yeah, I sort of wanted this conversation a little while ago. And sometimes it's good to have these conversations when there's no trauma or no scars. And this has been in the post, right? We've been, and the words I always use, I think we're over-indexing some of the things that we're seeing. Right, so, and I watch the games, and I'm watching the layoffs, and we're not talking about first time Cruyff volley flicks round the back, round the corner. We're not talking about that stuff. We're talking just about availability and setting the play. So you know, when I say set the play, you don't mean by post up, set the play backwards where it's come from. We don't talk about funky angles here. We talk about basic 101, set the play, up, set, through. That's all it is. He's a setter. Smith Rowe is a setter. Martinelli can do this setting job. Pepe can do this setting job. I'm telling you, they can do it. We just, and I wanted to see it. I wanted to see it before it was a problem. And now we don't know. And now it's a problem. Because when we look at the screen, we can't see anything. And my Spurs mates told me this years ago. They called him Alex Lacazette, and I laughed. But it's true. How do you feel when you watch him? Right? So there's not enough there. And sometimes when we analyze things, we look at the last thing that we see. But you need to look at what a player is potentially giving you sometimes. When I look at him, I don't see a potential of across-the-face movement. In fact, the header wasn't too bad, the movement. He never normally does that. Right? He hides behind people. I don't see him spinning in behind. I didn't see the connectivity to either of the side pods. I didn't see him moving. Cedric was desperately looking for him. I was trying to thread it through 14 people to get to him, and then he was always half a yard away. In the end, he's an important person to our dressing room. There was a period, I think Gabriel made a mistake in the game, and it was Lacazette that came up to him and said, mate, come on, get yourself back together. And I do appreciate there's an intangible side to football, but there's also a side to football when it comes to goals and the threat of a goal, and we're just not seeing it. And it's something we have to make a decision on, and I think it's already too late. Because none of us can say with our hand and heart any of the solutions that we can all magic up in our heads right now. We don't know if any of them can work. And because we haven't seen anything else. No. And this is why, this is it. And because we had so many narrow wins, we never had a chance to experiment and have a look because we were holding on in games. You know, big games, we won them all. It was all good, right? And he was part of it. I was there against Wolves. He was tremendous in that game. Absolutely tremendous. And so it's just a matter of tactical evolution, and you have to evolve even when you're doing well. Evolve, because you will get rumbled. It doesn't take much to work out that Thomas Partey runs a whole midfield. And if you can break the link from Thomas Partey to Odegaard, you break the link to the best under 21 footballer in the world. It doesn't take a super scout to work that one out. Then you're asking the left side of Nuno, Xhaka and Smith Rowe to then win the game for you?
Yeah.
It's not happening, mate. It's not happening. You know, this is what we need to do. You need to evolve your tactics even when the day is sunny. You try something new for when this day comes along. And this was the conversation I tried to have on the podcast a few weeks ago. Now we're here. We're here, and now we're thinking, and we're leaping into solution mode. That's what we do. We're fans, right? We change systems. We move people around. We want to play this player. We need to evolve when the day is sunny. That is what a coach does. Overthink, think again. How can I change it? Because you will get rumbled. And our highlight players are so good, it's not hard to see how Arsenal play. Not hard at all. I mean, it really is simple. And now, much like my basketball terminologies, you're asking other players to score the baskets. And if we can't build up because our main man is not there, if we can't get the ball to Odegaard, who dictates all our games, if we can't get the ball to Saka, Martinelli was not in this game, but he will be back because he's now undroppable. If we can't get the ball, we are not the same team. And that is it. So now we have to go again. And I've got some solutions. 4-2-3-1, double sixes, on the elbow, left-hand side, move our left winger inside one lane, and let's go and hammer the people. And it doesn't take much. We need to evolve it again and maybe tweak some personnel within that system. That's how I would do it.
Yeah, Paul, quickly. The one thing I do want to say, look, when you have no open play goals in 17 games at striker, there comes a point where you say no matter how much you're facilitating, what does a goal mean in football? Tim famously believes that they're overrated, but they still do. No matter, I kid. Look, Paul, the fact is, right, like, if we don't get top four and you look back at a 0-0 that cost it to us or a 1-1 and you say, what would two or three goals from Martinelli at striker have meant that we didn't get from Lacazette? And you could say, well, what would the deteriorating play have meant if we didn't have Lacazette facilitate? Like, I get that these are circular arguments, but I think we can reach a point of stereotyping player, you know, oh, the Firmino role and things like that. But as we saw against us, like Firmino nipped in at the near post and got a goal. So it is a tough call. I am inclined to think that given that Sambi and Tavares may be coming in, it's one change more than Arteta will want to make. But what are your quick thoughts on that? Paul, if you can hear me. Yep, I hear him trying to hit the mute button and unmute. I hear it. I hear the efforts.
Effing mute button.
See, you're like Lacazette, right? I know you've got good things inside you want to contribute, but maybe we've overstated them. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Look, this probably isn't the day to have this opinion, and I'm not the man to have it, so I'm not going to push it too hard because I'll piss everybody off. He can't really do his stuff if we don't really get the ball up the pitch, which was our biggest problem in this game. I'm not saying he's world-class or great or anything. I still think he's important to how we play. I would not for a moment consider changing how we play right now. While I agree with everything Clive says, I don't know where the window to stop and do other things is. And if I'm the coach and I'm feeling the way I do, I don't think putting Martinelli or Smith Rowe is going to magically work in the first game. In fact, I expect them to be somewhat anonymous in the middle of the park, unless we play differently and have Martinelli running in behind, in which case we'd have to play differently. Like, we need to beat Brighton. And I don't think Lacazette was the problem in this game. Our problems started much deeper playing out, controlling the game. I mean, it's not Lacazette's fault that everybody else was and, like, he had some ropey passes too. Like, you see the work he does when we're getting it into the final third. And for the first half, we had three or four opportunities to get into the final third. And by the way, he played a role in those and in the second half. So, like, it's not that I think he's brilliant. It's not that I'm seeing something that other people aren't seeing here. We've all seen it at this point. It works when we can progress the play up the pitch, and we just stalled in this game. And, like, if people really have figured this out, I don't know that we know. What we know is Crystal Palace came in all guns blazing, pressing our defensive line and playing out, and Thomas Partey. That's what we know. We don't know they rumbled how we play in the final third. We didn't do enough of it. Then they sat back. Like, we could have scored two goals in the second half easy, but we didn't. So, like, I'm not saying I'm sure I'm right. I just don't see the window to do something different. I absolutely expect Martinelli or Smith Rowe to be invisible as a striker in the first or second or third game they play. We don't have 15, 20 or 30 games to play here. We've 9. So while I agree with Clive, in the medium long term, and especially when we get to the summer, I don't agree for Brighton, and I wouldn't have agreed for Crystal Palace, because that's like, look where we're at. We lost, and like the world's coming to an end, and like, especially with all with all the injuries, I'm just, it does not make me think now's the time to move shit around.
First of all, I am losing control of this podcast, as Clive now wants to add back in. So let's just be clear that this is no longer within my control. Like, here's the problem, right? When you've been on the run,
seeing as it's you and me chatting, don't let Clive back in. You don't have the time.
I don't. I am still supposed to be talking about shaving my privates too. But look, just the point before I let Clive back in is that this is the hard part when you're a team that's been on a pretty good run, but there's a suspicion that there's an area that can be better. If you make that move, you may get better, and you should always be trying to get better. But it is possible that you lose something you found and you don't get better. The question is, at what point do you say diving into the risk of changing is worth the reward of the what we could be, Clive? And now Clive's on mute. I've got a bunch of muted guys today.
Well, I think I think Lacazette will play at the weekend. There's no drama there. I just think I did say there were some narrow games. It's really hard for us to have a look at things. But sometimes you have to take an opportunity to look at things. And what I think we were doing, we were just putting Eddie on as a replacement. I think we should look at other options. You know, I think there are other ways to look at things, other ways to win games, maybe in a 5-3-2 or something like that. Just other options to get more people on the pitch, like Nuno, for example, not just Lacazette, options as well. I looked at this, I looked at the City game.
The attacking end, though, Clive, if you think back on games, we very few times we had Martinelli or Smith Rowe fit and on the bench.
Yeah, I did say that, and there wasn't really the game states for it as well. So I sort of caveated my opinion. But I think what we're doing with Laka is just bringing Eddie on. And I don't think we learn anything from doing that, because I don't think the promised land is in Eddie's boots, another player about to leave the club. Right. So I looked at the City game. I thought it was quite a similar game to this. And Tim made a really good point. I think we're losing it. We played okay for last hour. Right. And we really did. We played okay for last hour. Crystal Palace against City had 174 passes. Against us, they had 208. They only had 32 attacking third passes against City. Against us, they had 34. Right? They had 7 shots against City. They had 6 shots against us, but they had 5 on target. I think they had hardly any on target. Right, so we're talking about a situation where we had them. And so if we have that many, you know, Arsenal had 147 attacking third passes in this game. So although we were all, we all know that 8 or 9 or even 10 of our players were rubbish, absolutely rubbish. First touch, rubbish, intensity, rubbish, body language, rubbish, asleep, concentration, rubbish. We still had comparative numbers. City had 174 attacking third numbers against Palace. Palace have an off-the-ball team on a hard, bouncy pitch, nice and tight, give you the outsize, travel when you try to switch it, work off your first touch, smash you. That's what they do. And so we have to have better attackers. Forget the game, forget who it is. We need to have better attackers, because when you've got 147 attacking third passes, you need to do more. You need to do more. And I include Lacazette in that. I include Odegaard in that. I include Smith Rowe in that. I include Saka in that in this day. We need more attacking threat to get where we want to get to. And we shouldn't be afraid of asking these questions, right? We shouldn't.
Well, so,
you know, in fact, the first thing, I'm telling you, mate, the one of the worst things that happened in this game was in the first 2 minutes, we have a simple three-pass combination. It goes to Smith Rowe, and he doesn't quite control it. He goes out for a goal kick. And I felt they thought this was going to be easy.
Yeah, he was in. He was in.
He was in. Yeah. If he controls that, we're in.
Like, I'm not arguing. This might sound like it's arguing, but, like, that was a lack of through ball. It was good.
Oh, really, yeah, good. Well, yeah, really good.
Really
good.
Yep.
And he was a little bit behind him. Or Smith Rowe was overran. Who cares, right? But it looked, you know, if you're watching that game and all of us felt it, we're thinking, this is going to be good. This could be good tonight. Look at Smith Rowe out to win run. Lacazette around the corner. Lovely. Here we go. Let's settle down, right? But that was it. That was Go ahead, sorry.
No. I'm sorry. I am losing good analysis in the interest of trying to take the reins back of the podcast, which is the wrong balance.
So I'll be quiet, mate. And I just want to have the discussion with my podcast brothers here. We shouldn't be afraid to talk about the deficiencies in our team, regardless whether we're winning or losing. Well, we should just be able to say it. Don't ignore it. We can see it. The guy's been blowing out of his ass for 3 years. We know it. Tim, you've been watching it. I've been watching it. We know it. Mm. How many times have you seen him substituted? You know, we mustn't over-index people like this. We must just call it as it is. When they do well, well done. But you know what? We could do better. You know, that's how we got to think, in my opinion.
Well, and I understand Paul's point, which is, do we need to do better right now, or do we need to do better in the summer? And that's for Arteta to decide. And the only thing I'll say, and this is the problem with defensive errors, we didn't play well in that first half. We were totally dominated in all the duels, in all the physical aspects of the game. We carved a few openings up that we didn't make the most of, but by and large, every touch from Odegaard and Partey was sloppy. Everything was bad. It was just a really poor performance out of the gates. And yet, if you don't give away 2 silly goals that in total amount to about 0.3 or 0.4 expected goals, if you just do the basics, you're in it nil-nil at halftime. Well, and then Smith Rowe takes that chance in the second half, or Odegaard takes his chance in the second half, or, you know, you get the penalty that maybe Lacazette deserved, I think more than Saka deserved, and they don't get theirs. I mean, the point is, that second half we played well, but it didn't matter because of silly errors. So the hard part with this game is, it's the uncharacteristically dumb defensive errors that took the game out of our hands in a game where basically neither team was particularly effective attacking. We just gifted them a lead they couldn't throw away, and it wasn't our day. Now, where I want to shift this to finish is what we do for Brighton, what this means in the context of top four. I think it is important to point those things out. But as I referenced, if I don't explain to you the importance of shaving your privates, I have not done my job. The three things you need to do today: you need to give to the charity, you need to shave your privates, and you need to find more talent for your business. And you've come to the right podcast for all of those things, because when you go to manscaped.com, promo code ArsenalVision, you save 20% and get free worldwide shipping on the Performance Package 4.0. And you get the weed whacker for your nose and your ears. And you get the Lawnmower 4.0 for your privates and the rest of your body, with ceramic blades and skin-safe technology and a long battery life and wet-dry operation and a really cool inductive charging cradle that you just put it in and it charges. He says, knowing exactly what he's talking about. And you get the deodorant, and you get the toner, and you get the shed travel bag, and you get the free boxer briefs, which I am wearing right now. They are sexy, according to my wife. She said it. Yuck. Point is, the thing with the lawnmower, and I've said this before, and I'll just say this quickly, you're going to shave, like you're going to do it. And so then it's really just a simple question of like, well, am I going to use the razor that's been in my shower for weeks and months? Or am I going to use this, you know, device that was meant for like, you know, trimming the hedges? No, don't do that. Get something that is purpose-built, that goes in the shower with you, that has an LED light, you see what you're doing. It's designed for loose skin, which is probably more information than you need, but it's because that loose skin needs to be shaved, not sliced. That's the deal. Get the Lawnmower 4.0, get the Performance Package. You save 20%, which is a lot, and you get free shipping worldwide when you go to manscaped.com and use promo code ArsenalVision. Manscaped.com, promo code ArsenalVision. Now, to get the best talent for your business, you need to use the one company that does it better than any other, because you only pay for the quality applicants that meet your must-have requirements, and you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place, and that's at Indeed. You're going to want to go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to take advantage of this offer right now. Indeed is the only job site where you're guaranteed to find quality applications that meet your must-have requirements, or you don't pay. That simple. How about a service that if it doesn't deliver what you're looking for, you don't pay? If it does, you do. Seems good. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites, which absolutely stinks, you can just go to one that does it all. And with Instant Match, as soon as you post, sponsor a post, you get a short list of quality candidates with resumes on Indeed that match your must-have requirements, your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. And you only pay for the quality application that meets your must-have requirements. I've said that multiple times, but the point is like a lot of times people don't even know what to apply to on these job sites. But when you can invite someone who meets what you need, it's perfect. It's like, oh, this company wants me. I'm a good fit for them. It improves the whole experience. So Indeed delivers four times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to claim your $75 sponsored job credit. Offer valid through April 30. Go to Indeed.com/BlueWire to claim your $75 sponsored job credit. $75 credit before April 30th. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire. You need Indeed, Clive. Is that enough of that?
Indeed.
Tim, we're going to lose you shortly, so I want to quickly go to you on the state of the top four race for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, Spurs win big, we lose big. It's over. We're not going to do it. Blah, blah, blah. Next week, we host Brighton at full time. They kick off at Villa Park. By the time that game's over, it could feel the exact opposite. I think there's going to be a lot of twists and turns in this whole thing. The idea that we were going to get top four was never predicated on us being perfect. It's predicated on the flaws of the competition as well, that they won't go and run the table. But to be fair, you start looking at some of the results Spurs have posted, some of the 4-0s and the 5-0s and the 5-1s, you know, and the win over Manchester City. And granted, that was wrapped around losses to Wolves and losses to Burnley. But like, you know, when Conte does have the pedigree and they do have the kind of the opposite of us, which is all their talent is basically in their striker. I'm curious where you sit with this now. Scott posted his new data that has Spurs now just favorites for it. The 538 has us just slight favorites. The Predictatron, as it always is in tatters. What's your sort of 30,000 foot view of this competition as it stands right now?
Yeah, and like, I'm not surprised. I've always thought it would go a bit like this. Like, both teams, you know, both Arsenal and Spurs are kind of good but flawed at the same time. I guess I'm slightly concerned that they're coming into form. And again, we won't know until the next game, really, whether this is us coming out of form or us being sussed out. But then again, you know, when you think about being sussed out, like, everyone knows what Spurs are going to do. Everyone knows exactly how they play, but a lot of teams seem powerless to stop it. They did make a very good, unfortunately, a very good addition to their front three as well, albeit I think generally with the Spurs front three, Son and Kane do the heavy lifting, really, and the third player is just, you know, is not the biggest part of that, is a little bit of a water carrier, but I don't mean that in a really reductive way. So that they seem to have sorted some issues, and they seem to have sorted this thing where they can't beat the kind of smaller teams who sit back. You know, they thumped Newcastle this weekend pretty comprehensively. And look, that I've always felt they had the better run in, and they play us at home and we play them away. I think the kind of the sad truth for all of us and our anxiety levels is it's all going to come down to the game between us on May the 12th. I really think it might be that simple. And that's probably not good for any of us and our life expectancy, but I do think it will come down to that. I mean, for us, it's really, but this is an illustration of how quickly it changes, right? Because when we beat Villa, we felt like, well, we're the team in form. We've got the momentum. You know, it's all with us now. The wind's in our hair and all of that. And then just one game later, it feels different. And I do think that that will switch backwards and forwards a little bit. So I've never been, you know, I've never been thinking, oh, yeah, we've got this. You know, because things change so quickly, they changed in our favor very quickly, and they can get away from you quickly as well. But honestly, I think this will go down to the last game of the season, and there won't be more than a point or two in this, which is why I think it will be decided by the head-to-head by the two teams on May the 12th.
Yeah, I mean, it's also going to be decided to some extent by how much teams that have nothing to play for care to play against Spurs, because they go to a Villa that's not playing for much. They host a Brighton not playing for much. They go to a Brentford not playing for much. They host a Leicester not playing for much. Liverpool and Arsenal games are huge, and they have to lose them both, I think, or at least lose to Liverpool and draw Arsenal, depending how things go. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And like the same goes for us as well. Yeah. So we've got Newcastle as well. We've got Brighton as well. I actually think, to ruin the fun, maybe, I think Everton will be safe on the last day. I do think they'll get out of it.
That would be great news for us, I think.
Yeah. And they won't have anything to play for. You know,
I don't know how much champagne I can drink in that VIP box, Tim, but I don't want it to be life threatening. And if that game matters, it may get to that level. Yeah.
And so there's plenty of factors like that that come into it, but like you say, about how much teams really want it at this stage of the season. So yeah, but the thing that's worrying, I think, is that I think the other thing it was going to come down to was who has their key players fit, because neither of these teams has a great deal of depth in terms of quality, and it feels like that's getting away from us. And, you know, we not to wish injury on a player, but...
Oh, you mean maybe like an England captain who likes to hurt fellow professionals and gets all the calls? And yeah.
You know,
maybe... Wouldn't want to wish that, yeah.
You know, it does feel a little like that, more than the result last night, or together with the result, you know, the loss of two key players who are very difficult to replace. But unfortunately, we've had to get used to playing without that. That feels like it could be significant as well. And so much for us is going to rest on how seamlessly we're able to replace them, or even if we're creative to, you know, be able to do something a bit different that confuses our opposition, but not us.
Yeah. Well, that's well said. And I wanted to get you in there. We're going to row it back to the game a little bit and talk subs. But before we lost Tim, I wanted to get the 30,000 foot view. I think like Tim's point, you know, what you said, Tim, is a good one, which is like, before kickoff this weekend, we were feeling great. They won, we lost, and now we feel terrible. And like, there's going to be more of those kind of situations, maybe as soon as this coming weekend. We're going to have to ride that. The players are going to have to ride that emotion. Obviously, it's the injuries, I think, that have us feeling that little extra bit of concern. And so we'll see how that plays out. Tim, I believe that's going to do it for you today, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay, Tim's on Twitter at Stoberto. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Tim.
My pleasure as always.
Clive, I think in a previous podcast, I said the one player that this doesn't work without is Thomas Partey. And now we're going to find out if that's true. Hopefully the injury is nothing serious. I don't think we really have an update yet. He's going to go for a scan this week. If we're lucky, he misses no time. But I don't see that as the outcome. I would certainly take just missing one game. But it begs the question how we will... That's the wrong use of begs the question. And I want to single-handedly stamp that out. It raises the question of how we address his absence. The good news is that Sambi Lokonga comes in having not seen him in ages. He was sort of last seen on a milk carton. I don't know if that translates internationally, but that's where like missing people would be posted. He played well. I thought he looked good. I thought he looked like kind of what I remembered him being. Good close control, first touch, little stab passes. He looked good, but playing against a Palace team whose physical effort had been expended at that point and were more focused on maybe being a little bit more compact and sitting back. So I don't know how to evaluate it, but I'm curious, Clive, how you evaluate our first look for a while at Sambi Lokonga and whether he can just be handed the reins of the quote party role or if that's asking too much of him.
Yes, the party's looked spectacular recently. Not everyone loves him. I had some debates last night. And suddenly those debates came around again on his first bad game in 2022. Suddenly those people reappeared in my timeline again. It's very
after
interesting.
After qualifying his country for the World Cup.
Yeah, and then going to see the president. Not. And basically, maybe the issue was before the game. A lot of times you lose games before the kickoff. And party's readiness, Gabriel's readiness, you know, there's a few players there that travelled and just, I know it went round to a Monday, so less excuses, but Saka's readiness, there's a few of them just didn't look quite right. So part here, we've all looked at the pass maps, we can all see him in a big space there, running past 3-4 people, moving the ball around. And then you sort of say to yourself, well, no one else can do that, he's irreplaceable. Well, Sambi came on, did it a different way. And so stylistically, things just change. I'm never afraid of change. I'm really not. I'm not afraid of change. Just the right type of change. And when Sambi comes in, we might find something else. We might find something else from Saka. We might see a level of responsibility from Odegaard. Maybe the V will be a bit tighter, you know, to protect against defensive transitions. And maybe that brings in our wing forwards from lane 5 to lane 4. And maybe our fullbacks will be exposed on the outside. You can just push into the outside and maybe be the overlappers that you love, Elliot. And given the fact we've got Cedric and probably Nuno, they're both overlappers. So you can do things within system. We mustn't be afraid of it, you know. I don't know, maybe just the way I think about the game. I am always looking to change something. Because that's the only way to be, right? So the Thomas Partey, okay, we've lost him. It looks like the games that worry me are not Southampton and Brighton. I'm no disrespect. But we've got Chelsea and Manchester United on April the 20th and the 23rd. I can't see him playing both of those games, regardless of injury or not, right? So because the turnaround is just too quick. Then we've got West Ham thereafter. Those three games are huge. And I think we're going to need him back by then, you know. But will we? I'm not too sure. So Sambi comes in. We adjust, we protect, and we use the squad that we have. I don't see we have any choice, and he's the right player. And I thought he showed a wonderful sense of responsibility and personality for someone who hasn't played since January. And so, yeah, let's see other people step up now and adjust to the fact that we lost some key men and see where we go.
Yeah, I mean, I do think Arteta created a bit of a single point of failure, ironically, in Thomas Partey, in that our system was brilliant, Paul, but it was brilliant because he was brilliant. And I think what we saw against Palace when he was off his game is everything else stopped working. The ball wasn't getting in to the Odegaard Saka pod on the right. The ball wasn't finding Lacazette between the lines. And, you know, Lacazette has something to say for that too. But like Thomas Partey was a bit off his game. You know what he was willing to do a lot more last night than we've seen? Wall pass back to a defender. Wall pass back to a defender in situations against City, against Liverpool, under immense pressure. Forget the physical side of the game. He's been under pressure. We've seen him open his body, turn and face and carry it past someone. And then all of a sudden, everything is available to us. You've got numbers. He wasn't as willing to do it last night. There's so many possible explanations for it. And yeah. Clive touched on a lot of them. This isn't about me criticizing Partey, by the way, not remotely. He's been brilliant. It's about me saying, I think we saw that he's a bit of a single point of failure for this system. And so even as good as Sambi was, game state notwithstanding, I don't know that I believe this can work with him in that role. It's certainly a big, big ask if that's what we're going to try to do.
Yeah, I think we've loads of reaction. Like, we're terrible losers, all of us. Like, it just really hurts when we lose. I think we lose our shit collectively. Look, Partey wasn't just pressed. He wasn't a single point of failure yesterday because they rumbled us.
Can I stop you for 1 second, though? Just to be clear, I'm not saying he's a single point of failure yesterday. I think he's been a single point of failure for the last 3 months. He just hasn't failed. You know what I mean? It's so much responsibility is on his shoulders to make this work.
Bear with me, though.
Okay, yeah.
He struggled yesterday for two reasons. They targeted him, but they weren't going to be able to do that for 90 minutes. And other teams have targeted him, and he was incredibly sloppy. But that wasn't the biggest issue with Thomas Partey. The biggest issue was that everybody else was really sloppy. What you do when everybody's pressing Thomas Partey is everybody else then has time and space. And we did. It's just everybody else bloody spilled the ball too. Like the left wing was beginning to function. Xhaka, Nuno, Smith Rowe were beginning to make an impression along that side. There were good movements in the first half. But on the right-hand side, you had Odegaard. You had Gabriel distributing from the back. Ramsdale was under a lot of pressure because of all the pressing. But his distribution wasn't quite where it's been. Like, it wasn't all about... had everybody else been functioning and we'd been in form, we would have just played around it and they would have settled down and then Thomas Partey would have been feeling his oats and swinging it around. It would have been okay. You can't go to Palace, get pressed by those guys, which is their game, and concede two quick goals, then be rattled and everybody spill the ball all over the place and then decide, oh God, we need to totally rework our plan because everybody's got us rumbled. I think we're way over our ski tips here.
You hear that I don't think we should do that though, right? Like I want us to keep the plan as intact as possible. What I'm saying is, I think there are certain players without whom I don't know if it's possible and Partey would be one.
Can I support you here, Paul? Because I think you've literally nailed it. You've nailed it. I think Partey can have an off game, but then Ben White can't have one behind him. And Gabriel got to have Odegaard, a good distribution game behind him. And then Odegaard's got to come deeper and get it off White. But if he can't control it, then we're going to notice the difference. You know, if anything, Partey then tried too hard. When he tries too hard, he pops his thigh. Like he was running forward into the box. He was doing everything because he's playing with a new sense of responsibility and confidence. And he's overextended during a period when he was fatigued. And that's what happens, right? So,
Hey, look, and I think what we need to do with Partey or without Partey, but now without Partey, given that Nuno, like in our scenario, Clive, where we keep playing Nuno, and I think you're on board with this, Elliot.
I am as well. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. You know, pull Xhaka back a little bit and have the, especially with Sambi, like, that's probably going to happen anyway. So you need that support for Nuno without Xhaka dropping into full back position. But also, the best part of his game is pushing forward. So, you know, you're going to need to pull Xhaka back a little bit. That'll make us a little bit more secure in midfield, give Sambi some support. I know we've all got used to the idea that we need Xhaka pushing up, but we also know it's not actually his biggest strength. There are other ways of filling in that spot with Nuno going forward and Martinelli dropping into the 10 spot or Smith Rowe dropping in. So maybe everybody's rumbled us. Maybe it's not going to work anymore, but I'm not going to do that off the back of a Palace game that I could well have predicted the first 20 or 30 minutes. I just didn't, in my mind, I was not planning that we'd concede to.
Yeah. And to be clear, I think I said what made this game go the way it did is the dumb defensive errors that cost us two goals, not really anything else. And my point isn't change the system, tear it up, do anything different. I want to try to keep the system as intact as possible. I think there are certain systems that certain teams have that without those players, you can't. I mean, like if Tottenham Hotspur didn't have Harry Kane, I mean, they'd have nothing, but they sure as hell couldn't just lump the ball forward to him and ask him to create every chance and get on the end of every move. Like, and I think Thomas Partey has taken on almost that big a responsibility. Clive, I guess here's a question. Can Xhaka drop into that role and you bring a Smith Rowe into the eight and try to keep the system intact that way? Or is it as simple as Sambi comes in and Xhaka drops into more of a double pivot?
I think Sambi comes in, but it doesn't really matter.
That changes Odegaard's role too, right? Then he's more of a pure 10 between the lines. He has to supply on both sides. You lose those pods on the left and right,
Not necessarily. It just depends where you just give. just think of the game in possession, out of possession. So 4-4-2 out of possession, and in possession, what can we, depending on which side we build up, we could decide how you want to go. We could go back to the 3-2-5 build up and drop Xhaka into the back line and build up that way, and have Ben White to the right and have Gabriel in the middle. We can do all sorts of things, you know, and put Nuno higher up the pitch and be an offensive weapon. He may unlock some goals. There's things that we've done, there's things that we can do. They're all fine by me. With the same personnel on the pitch, more or less, give or take one or two players. So I'm not overly concerned. I think I want to reiterate the point. I think it's very important that there have been times when teams have targeted certain players, like Saka, for example, when Odegaard has stepped up. You know, to have them both be a little bit off is not normal for us. Yeah. Have Martinelli, Smith Rowe, I felt was a bit passive. Lacazette was passive in and out of the game. When he did get the ball, he was inconsistent on occasions. There was just so many people off it. You know, it's just too many people. Never seen Ben White play like that for a long time. He looks so edgy. You know, edgy. And Gabriel played against somebody for the first time that was bigger than him. He looked edgy. You know, they'd done a job on us, right? They'd done a job on us. But Villa tried to do a job on us, and we overcame them because people stepped up for the periods that we needed, and we didn't concede. And and so I think that's the key thing. It's the adaption to the tactics, and you adapt to when someone is blocked off and having a darker day. The other players then adapt, and then they take the lead role, and then they swap the role over as the game develops, and then you push people back. It's just the nature of tactics, the nature of the rhythm of a game of football. What didn't happen in this game, when we did get to Odegaard, I mean, how many times did you see Odegaard miscontrolling? The technically most superior player in our side. Have you ever seen that before? I mean, they honestly skinned that grass. They skinned it. They didn't water that one. They didn't water it for City neither. They skinned it short, bouncing around. And I saw what they did. And Pep spoke about it. I thought they could do the same thing for us. Yeah, he got a new fade there. And so they skinned it. And that's fine. If you notice what Palace did, they ran with the ball a lot because the technical difficulty was short one-pass combinations. What do we like to do? One-pass combinations. What couldn't we do? We couldn't get the ball under control. So we didn't trust our one pass combinations. I'll promise you, watch it again and you'll see the times we were one pass, how we got in so easily. But every time we didn't feel confident in ourselves, we didn't feel confident in the surface. So we had to take a touch and they pressed off our touch. That was their game plan and it worked to perfection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start to wrap this up. I mean, look, one of the first things I tweeted at full time is I think the biggest challenge for Mikel Arteta right now is not to overreact. And we talked about this in the instant reaction pod, which is one of the best things a coach can do, a manager can do, is react to losses in a big way to get a change. But sometimes one of the most important things a manager can do is not react, to let a loss just be one loss and not mean anything more. The injuries, I think, make that harder, certainly. But Paul, I'll finish with this. The hard part now is every time we lose and Spurs win, it's going to feel like this. It's over, top four is gone. How can you think we have an injury, we're done. And every time it goes the other way, which it may very well this next weekend, it's going to feel the opposite. As fans, we can ride that wave. The emotions are part of the support. As a manager and to work with the players, he can't let them do that. So really that equanimity in the group is going to be so critical. This run that we were on was always going to end with a thud somewhere. That's happened. Do you agree, though, that now the key is to let one loss just be one loss and to go into this Brighton game reminding them the football they've been playing and trying to just reproduce that? I do think with all the tactical stuff we've decided, if he can keep the system as intact as possible, and that's hard when critical players are missing, that's probably the best position to be in. And it certainly could flip around by the end of the day on Saturday and feel right back to how it did before this weekend kicked off.
Yeah, that's the key. You got to bounce back. Something like this was always going to happen. Would have preferred if it happened a little later in the run. Look, we had a similar conversation after Liverpool. We were pretty down about that, even though it was a much better performance than this. But we all said, look, with one voice, what matters is, can we bounce back for the weekend game? And we did. That was the Villa game, wasn't it? And like we came back, we played. Like that's what this is all about. We got to bounce back against Brighton. I think the challenge for this team is I wouldn't have had much doubt about Arteta and this team, this squad, bouncing back for the weekend and going at it full force. Except the thing that saps a little bit of that belief and confidence is when you look around the dressing room and you have these changes. And I think that was a big issue with this game in terms of why we were a little off. It wasn't just the interlull stuff. We lost one or two key players coming into this game. Tierney was a big loss that we weren't expecting. And so you look around the dressing room and you see one or two key players that you don't have on the roster or on the bench. I mean, look at the thinness of the bench. And that saps a little bit of your belief and your confidence about how aggressive you can be. And so that's the biggest challenge this weekend. I think normally with our normal 11, our normal 14 available at the weekend, we bounce back, we go again. But if we have to make some changes, or even if it's just with this, well, we're going to have to make 2-3 changes, and they're going to look around the dressing room and not quite believe the way they would have done before. They kind of got to re-prove themselves in this new lineup, this new configuration. If it's Sambi, if it's Nuno getting another go, or maybe we move, let's not say how we might move it. It might be, who might it be? Cedric, Xhaka in that position. Let's switch Saka from the right wing to left back. No, thank you. You know, however we fill in that spot there, hopefully it's Nuno. Hopefully we go again. But either way, the team's going to have a bit of a gut check and say, do we believe? And you got to win a couple with that new configuration where you really believe and you're not faking it. So that's the biggest challenge. It's not just can we bounce back? Yes, we can. But it'll be a little different when the dressing room is changed.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And we'll just see how he handles it. We'll keep an ear out for what he has to say, during the week in his pre-match press conference with respect to Thomas Partey. Maybe we'll get a little lucky there. We'll see. But, you know, a lot still to be decided between now and Saturday. And I do think, you know, we host Brighton, then Spurs go to Villa, and it can all look different. So let's just keep our fingers crossed. Nothing has been decided yet. Please, please, please give generously to our fundraiser. Go to arsenalvisionpodcast.com, click charity. It'll take you to the Just Giving page. You're helping children. Children from refugees of war. If you listen to the last podcast episode, you'll hear what horrible things these kids are going through. And this will help children who are made refugee from the Ukrainian war, but also wars in Syria, in Yemen, Afghanistan, Ethiopia, and beyond. You know, when we hit our goal, we'll draw the winners to be in that VIP box. Just an amazing thing that we're doing. And for everyone who's given already, I can't thank you enough. We love you for it. Thank you. And we'll be back with more for Patreon tomorrow for the regular pod on Thursday and beyond. So Clive's on Twitter, Clive PFC. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you very much.
Paul's on Twitter, Paul's my fans. Thanks, Paul. Woohoo. My name is Alex Smith. You can block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. We love you very, very, very much. And we will talk to you after Arsenal 10, Brighton. No.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.